It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. One of the things America was built on is freedom of religion. The promise of religious diversity is viewed by many as one of our nation's greatest strengths, but it doesn't mean there haven't been issues and conflicts during our history, and especially at times like this. Our guest this hour is an interfaith expert who looks at some of the big questions surrounding religious diversity in America and whether or not America has lived up to the promises our founders envisioned. Do you see religious diversity as being one of our nation's greatest strengths? How does it help us? What are the benefits? Or do you see some drawbacks? What do we gain by working across religious lines? And when it comes to freedom of religion, do you think we've lived up to the promise that our country's founders envisioned? Share with us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Eboo Patel is the founder and president of Interfaith Youth Corps, a nonprofit organization that promotes interfaith leadership on college campuses. He's also a former faith advisor to President Barack Obama, and his new book is Out of Many Faiths, Religious Diversity and the American Promise. Eboo Patel, welcome to the morning show.
Great to be with you, John. Thanks for having me.
How important is religious diversity to the success of our democracy?
Well, I think it's both foundational and definitional. It's the dimension of identity that our founders got right. Benjamin Franklin famously made donations to the building funds of every faith community in Philadelphia across Christian sects, the Jewish community, and said that he only hoped that they would celebrate July 4th together and mourn his funeral together. George Washington famously wrote in a document called The Letter to the Hebrew Congregation of Newport, Rhode Island, that his government would give to bigotry no sanctuary and to persecution, no assistance. And I think a huge part of what America is about is the fact that if this nation gives dignity to a range of religious, ethnic, racial identities, people in those identity communities will help build up the country. And I think that's exactly what happened when it comes to religious diversity.
You write that the genius of this nation is not in how it vanquishes minority religions, but rather in how it welcomes their contributions. Certainly, that was the ideal from the start, but has the reality matched up to the vision?
I think the American story when it comes to religious diversity is largely a good one, and that's because citizens have made really important efforts to realize that American genius. And, you know, it's not an abstract genius, John. It's a very concrete one, and one of the ways to think about that is the number of civic institutions that faith communities build that serve the public good. I mean, think of all the Catholic colleges and universities just in the state of Wisconsin alone, several of which I visited, places like Edgewood in Madison and St. Norbert's. Those are colleges and universities established by religious communities that express their identity but serve the common good. You could say the same about social service organizations or refugee resettlement organizations or healthcare systems, et cetera, et cetera. Robert Putnam, the social scientist at Harvard, points out that probably half of American civic life or social capital has some kind of origins or inspiration from religious communities. And so that's a huge part of what our society is about, and I think we ought to cherish and protect it. To your question of have we lived up to this promise, I think the challenge is in each era, are we helping to realize the nature of the promise of America's, of an interfaith America for that era? So in the 20th century, a group of citizens literally invented the term Judeo-Christian so that America would be more likely to welcome the contributions of its Jewish and Catholic minorities. And right now, in a nation that has growing Muslim, Buddhist, Baha'i, secular humanist, Hindu, Jain populations, what's the next chapter in America's great story of religious diversity? And I think that chapter is called Interfaith America, that Interfaith America welcomes the contributions of people from this range of religious backgrounds.
I want to follow up that your reference to the Judeo-Christian tradition in America, because I think it's one that's fairly often completely misunderstood. Let's talk about that just a little bit. I know that you have a thing that you do in some of your public appearances that kind of points this out, having to do with the Plymouth Rock. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I do a lot of speaking on college campuses, and as I said earlier, I've probably been to 8 or 10 colleges there in Wisconsin. I love my time there, and one of the ways that I will often begin a speech on a college campus is by saying, you know, when the Pilgrims landed on the eastern seaboard and approached Plymouth Rock and dusted off the stone, they saw the words Judeo-Christian nation etched in it. And, you know, this group of like 18 or 19-year-olds who've done very well on their standardized tests will kind of give me this, oh, wow, look. And then a few seconds later realize that it's a joke. And we collectively realize it raises the question, well, how did the United States come to understand itself as a Judeo-Christian nation if it wasn't etched on Plymouth Rock or written into the Declaration of Independence or given to Moses on Sinai? And the fact of the matter is that it's a term that was literally made up. And the reason that it was made up is not because it's especially theologically accurate or historically accurate, but because in the early part of the 20th century, when the United States was experiencing a great deal of anti-Semitism and anti-Catholicism, a group of interfaith leaders who called themselves the NCCJ invented a term that would help America have a narrative that welcomed the contributions of its Jews and Catholics. And part of what I'm doing with IFYC right now is, I hope, helping to live out the 21st century dimension of that vision.
We've got some callers who want to join the conversation. Let's hear from John in Watertown to start with. John, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And this is a wonderful topic. I love it. And your guest, he sounds very reasonable. So I like that, too. I just wanted to say, to get it in the front, that freedom of religion is also freedom from religion. And let's not forget about all of the people that do not have a religion and are also great contributors to our American society. And also that the separation of church and state is oftentimes for the sake of the church and not for the state, because politics in the pulpit can destroy the church. I guess that's all I wanted to say. And I wanted to see if the guest had any, you know, comments on the rise of, you know, opting out the biggest religion in the United States right now, the biggest growth rate is in no religion. So,
and John, thanks for that. What about this, Eboo Patel? Are we becoming less religious in America?
Well, the first thing I want to say is I appreciate the caller calling me reasonable, and the caller's question and insight is not only reasonable, but I think is very important, which is that absolutely people have a right to participate in religious traditions or communities to whatever extent they want to. At IFYC, we talk about a deep respect for a range of orientations around religion, including atheist, agnostic, secular humanist, seeker, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, those people have made massive contributions to American society. One of the things we like to do at IFYC is hold up exemplars or heroes from a range of orientations around religion. We like talking about A. Philip Randolph as a secular humanist leader, for example. So I appreciate that insight. I find it very important.
And we'll come back to that and capture some more of that thought. Eboo Patel is the author of Out of Many Faiths, Religious Diversity, and the American Promise. He's with us, and you can be too, at 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Eboo Patel is the author of Out of Many Faiths, Religious Diversity, and the American Promise. We're having a conversation about religious diversity in America, and you should feel welcome to join us. When it comes to freedom of religion, do you think we've lived up to the promise that our country's founders envisioned? How can we be better at that? And what questions do you have about religious diversity in the United States? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Eboo Patel, one of the things that our caller just mentioned that it just struck me, and you commented on it as well, that he thanked you for being reasonable, and it was almost like that was a surprise. Why is it that we're so surprised when people who talk about faith are reasonable these days?
I was saying that a bit tongue in cheek in a friendly way, which is how I took it from your caller. Also, you know, I am not surprised when I meet somebody personally and individually, and we have a reasonable conversation about faith identity and diversity. I think that that's probably 95% of my personal interactions with people, and of course, this is my profession, so I do it 40 or 50 hours a week. I do think that in Twitter world and in social media world, people are affirmed for being unreasonable. And so if that's all you pay attention to, you see a whole bunch of unreasonable people. A friend of mine, David Bornstein, New York Times writer and the author of a book called How to Change the World, tells this hilarious story about his dad calling him one day and saying, "David, humans are worse than animals." And David says, "Dad, are you watching cable news?" And that's exactly what he was doing. I think that you know, unfortunately, right now we have a set of inputs and media who create a smokescreen around about human beings being worse than we actually are.
Well, I mean, that just struck me, you know, right out of the. But thanks for being reasonable. I mean, you know, that we have to thank each other for that. That just seems, I don't know, it threw me for a minute. Let's take another call while I collect myself. Joe is with us in Waukesha. Joe, welcome to the morning show.
Yes, hi. I guess to follow up on the comment about reasonable, I guess tongue-in-cheek means, I think religion is obviously not based on reason. My concern, I guess, in America is that as the most powerful country in the world, there is still far, far too much reason, or sorry, too much religion, because it what seems to be happening now in the I guess in the higher levels of theological thinking, is that somehow the God of Islam, the God of Christianity, et cetera, are all the same. And in a sense, to try to blend religions into sort of can't we all be nice. But religion has been basically a form of dividing human beings. Anybody who has a knowledge of history knows that the Crusades were not fought for the desire to kind of bring Islam and Christianity together, quite the opposite. In the same way in our invasion of Iraq, etc., when Bush used the word Crusades. In other words, this country, the whole idea, our motto, "In God We Trust," well, what God are we talking about?
Joe, thanks for sharing that. I want to make sure we have enough time for Eboo Patel to respond, and we have a lot of other callers. What about our history, and what about that says, you know, okay, religions have difficulty uniting us. They're much better at dividing us.
Any topic as large as religion has multiple histories, right? And so you can absolutely tell a history of violence, which I think it's terrible, that violence. And you can tell a really optimistic history of hopefulness and inspiration and cooperation. And I would prefer to say religion is likely to be with us for a long time and diversity is likely to be with us for a long time. How do we learn the history of inspiration and cooperation and extend that and pay attention to the history of violence and intolerance and try to mitigate that as much as possible? One of the figures I hold up is Martin Luther King Jr., who famously said, "I am many things to many people, but in the deep recesses of my heart, I'm a Baptist minister, and my commitment to Jesus as the Son of the Living God is the highest commitment that I have." And I say that as a Muslim. So it's not that I hold that doctrinal commitment, but I have great regard for King's Christian inspiration and also how he had interfaith partnerships, learning from the great Hindu Mahatma Gandhi around nonviolence and social movements, building friendships with Abraham Joshua Heschel, the great Jewish leader, and Thich Nhat Hanh, the great Buddhist leader. So, you know, the big question, I think, is how do we extend the positive vectors of inspiration, cooperation, contribution that we want to see in the world?
Joe, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us this morning. Let's hear next from Tom in Burlington. Tom, welcome to the morning show.
Goodbye, John. You're a thorough professional. We're going to miss you. I wanted to say this, that for every dollar we don't collect in taxes from the churches, all of us have to pay to make up. And my big question is, has the attitude on religion gone any forward, gone forward with this gay situation? In my little town, we had a young man who attempted suicide. He didn't kill himself, but he wasn't even invited in his church. He was actually kicked out of his church for being a gay person. What kind of forward movement are we making?
Tom, thanks for that. Ibu Patel?
I believe God loves all people. I believe God loves all people.
Tom, thanks for sharing that with us. Ibu Patel, tell us why you wrote this book.
Because I think that the story of America and religious diversity is a mostly inspiring story, and it's a really important story. It's a major part of our civic life in America. Out of America's 2,800 four-year colleges and universities, 230 of them were built by Catholics. That's almost 10%. Over 100 were initially built by Methodists, places like USC and Syracuse and Duke and Emory. You can tell a similar story when it comes to our health and social service organizations. This is a huge part of American civic life, and we would do well to both treasure it and to strengthen it. I also think that it is no small thing that we have built in the United States a healthy, religiously diverse democracy, which is to say a nation in which people who orient around religion differently mostly live in cooperation with each other. And I think that that is becoming more complex as the United States becomes more religiously diverse, which means everything from atheists to Zoroastrians, and as religious identity becomes a fault line of conflict around the world. So I think that there is much to gain by strengthening our religiously diverse democracy and much to lose by not doing so.
Well, and as pointed out in your book, diversity is going to happen to us whether we are ready for it or not. I mean, it's happening right now.
I think that that's exactly right. You know, diversity is like the sunrise. You know, the day is going to happen whether you're ready for it or not. And I think what we need in America is more interfaith leaders. One of the things we like to say at IFYC is that bridges don't fall from the sky or rise from the ground. If we want bridges between diverse identities and communities, we're going to need people to build them. And that's why IFYC does its work on college campuses, helping create extracurricular and academic programs that nurture interfaith leaders. And, you know, one of the great successes that higher education has had and that we've contributed to is that there are now something like 250 courses on interfaith studies and interfaith leadership. There's 20 minors and concentration programs around the country on interfaith studies and interfaith leadership. IFYC runs an annual interfaith leadership training that 130 campus delegations came to last year. So it's a growing movement, and we are just the most recent chapter in that movement. And in so many ways, that movement starts even before the European founding of the United States in the 1770s. It starts in the middle of the 17th century, and I'm talking about the European dimension of this. There were, of course, indigenous traditions that were cooperative long before Europeans arrived. But in the 17th century, you have Roger Williams escaping the theocracy of John Winthrop's Massachusetts Bay Colony and saying, we could have a religiously diverse democracy. Why can't Jews and Muslims and Quakers and Baptists be viewed as citizens of a nation? This is in 1644 he's saying this. The Flushing Remonstrants is a group of non-Quakers standing up against Peter Stuyvesant's anti-Quaker doctrine and saying, we welcome anybody to worship in our little hamlet of Flushing, which is now in Queens, probably the most religiously diverse neighborhood in the country. This is in the middle of the 17th century. It's an important American story, and we have the opportunity to write the next chapter if we rise to the challenge of being interfaith leaders.
Certainly, there are a lot of questions and issues pertaining to this idea of religious diversity in America, and you examine many of them in the book, and there's so many questions here. We'll never get to them all, and so I want to invite our listeners to join us again, and then we'll take we'll hear some news, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk more about this fascinating topic. Listeners, when it comes to freedom of religion, do you think we've lived up to the promise that our country's founders envisioned? And if not, how can we be better on this front? And what questions do you have about religious diversity here in the United States? Eboo Patel stays with us. He's the author of the book, Out of Many Faiths, Religious Diversity and the American Promise. Please join our discussion at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email. The address is ideas@WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lots of ways to get in touch. Join us, 800-642-1234. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Eboo Patel is the founder and president of Interfaith Youth Corps. He's also the author of Out of Many Faiths, Religious Diversity and the American Promise. We're assessing where we are in America in terms of religious diversity and maybe even speculating on where we still need to go. What do you think? When you look at the variety of religions practiced in America today, do you think this is what the Founding Fathers envisioned when they wrote the First Amendment? If not, what do you think they wanted to see? Do you see religious diversity as being one of our nation's greatest strengths, or is it, in your view, a weakness? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Steve, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the Morning Show.
Hi, thank you. One of my concerns is that there seems to be a large growing contingent of people that want to marginalize religion. Some of the conversation was even happening earlier in the program. And I'm wondering what the guest feelings are about that. You know, right now we talk about separation of church and state, so we can't have that in the public square. And it's so many laws being pressured now to say that people are being discriminated against in their own business, and now you can't even have religion in business, whether that is, you know, gay wedding cakes or things like that, or even applying for grants for playground equipment if you're a religion-based enterprise. So wondering what the guests' thoughts are about the people trying to use government to marginalize religion.
Steve, thanks for that thought. Eboo Patel?
So, you know, I'll go back to one of the main themes of my book, Out of Many Faiths, which articulates what I call the American promise and the American genius. The American promise is giving dignity to a range of identities. The American genius is that when dignity is given to those identities, to a range of identities, those identities will build up the nation. And that is precisely what's happened in American civic life. As I said earlier, something like 50% of American civic life has its origins or inspiration in religious communities. And I think as the United States gets more religiously diverse, a part of what we have to do is to learn how to welcome the contributions from an increasing diversity of religious communities. So in the early 20th century, the United States thought of itself largely as a Protestant nation and marginalized and excluded Jews and Catholics. And that hurt not only those communities, but our collective civic life. Can you imagine America without Catholic institutions that serve the common good or Jewish institutions? Now, with growing populations of Muslims and Buddhists and Baha'is and Jains and Sikhs and atheists and Zoroastrians and others, the question is, how are we going to welcome the contributions of those communities? And I believe that it's not only good for those communities, it's not only giving dignity to those identities, but it strengthens the whole nation.
Steve, thank you for sharing that with us. Eboo Patel, that brings up a point that we hadn't gotten to yet. There are a lot of questions and issues pertaining to this idea of religious diversity in America. And in the book, you examine these through what you call the lens of the Muslim faith. Why choose that religion?
Well, right now, Muslims in America and anti-Muslim sentiment in America is very salient. And so I thought that that was an interesting window through which to look at this broader issue. So when we think of something like the Muslim ban, which President Trump first advances about 10 days into his term in office, and he highlights seven nations that which are almost entirely Muslim nations that we would not accept immigrants from. It's an interesting question to ask. Well, the people in this country from those nations, what have those lives been like? What have those experiences been like? What have those contributions been like? And the Cato Institute found that people who were immigrants or refugees from those nations, there was not a single terrorist incident related to them in 30 years, and 10,000 of those people had become doctors and were contributing to this nation in building up its health and medical infrastructure. And so that for me is the kind of example that I want to bring to the fore and say, don't we want to be welcoming the contribution of people from these religions and from these countries? Doesn't this strengthen America? In a previous era, we would have talked about anti-Catholicism or anti-Semitism and how those sentiments and forces were excluding the contributions of Jews and Catholics. And certainly, anti-Catholicism and anti-Semitism exist in the margins of American life, sometimes in the most heinous and ugly ways, as we just saw in the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting. But clearly, amongst the most salient sentiments of prejudice right now against the religious communities around Muslims. And so telling the story of how Muslims have and want to contribute to building up the nation, I think, is really important. And highlighting that within the American framework of a religiously diverse democracy that guarantees freedom and dignity to people from a range of orientations around religion.
800-642-1234 is the number to call to join our discussion about religious diversity in America. And we welcome your thoughts on this as well. Michael is with us in Cambridge next. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. As I've worked in the church for over 40 years, I just see how we tend to think, we get to the point where we think we have to defend God, which is always an interesting concept to me, that we have a God that somehow we think needs defending, if you will. And I look at the three Judeo-Christian religions, and we all have hospitality and welcoming the stranger as a hallmark of our undergirding of that, each of those three faith expressions. And yet, you know, we become the most violent of the religions on earth, the most violent people toward others that are not like us or that disagree with us. And that, even though I served as a minister for over 40 years, that it continues to be a challenge. And my thought has moved way beyond needing to defend religion. It's I tell people that, you know, when I look at Holy Scriptures, I have to look at it just for me. That was as though it was written for me. And I can't tell you exactly what it means to you, but I have to study it and look at it for me. And you have to look at your scriptures, whatever they mean, or your faith expressions or non-faith, your life, and what's important for you.
Michael, thank you for sharing that sentiment. It is religion is an extremely individual thing, and how we live it out is individual to us. And that is, wouldn't you say, Eboo Patel, that that's kind of what diversity is all about?
Well, you know, religion is individual. It's also communal. It's also civic. It's also historical. It's many things. And that's part of what makes religion, religious identity, religious diversity so interesting, so powerful. One of the the lines that the caller reminds me of is Karen Armstrong's line that religious people should probably spend less time trying to prove to others that they're right and more time trying to be good. And I like that sentiment a lot, not because I don't think that, you know, Muslims are right or that Christians shouldn't think that they are right. I think that that's perfectly reasonable. But I think that the way that we manifest that is by being good. And precisely as the caller said, hospitality, service, welcoming the stranger, helping others, being merciful, these are ways that we are good and that I think we, in enacting those ways of being good, hopefully cooperatively in ways that build up the nation and express our identities, we indicate to people that we come from a place that is true and beautiful and even right.
How feasible is it that we as a country can get to a better place when it comes to accepting religious diversity? And what would that look like?
I mean, I think American history is, like I said, largely inspiring on that, right? So some of those early European settlers who came to this country, they came seeking their own religious freedom, but perfectly happy to suffocate others. And John Winthrop is a really interesting example of this, right? He came as he said, build a bulwark against the Antichrist, which he thought was the Pope. But the people who responded to John Winthrop, people like Roger Williams and Anne Hutchinson, they had a wider idea of what it meant to welcome diverse religious identities. So Roger Williams gets banished to what becomes Rhode Island. He learns the language of the local Native American communities. He studies their cosmology. He writes on what it means to build a religiously diverse democracy. So I think that America is the positive story of American religious diversity is a story of expanding welcome of diverse religious identities. And the metaphor that I like to think of is not the melting pot, but the potluck nation. And I know we're heading to a break soon, but hopefully we can talk about that concept of a potluck nation after the break. And I define it very, very simply a nation needs to welcome the contributions of all communities. Otherwise, we will not feast.
Well, a potluck is definitely on the list, and that's certainly a big deal in the Midwest. Potluck tradition is very much alive here. You are right, we are about to take a break. I want to give our listeners a chance to get involved in the discussion again. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. What do you think about in terms of listeners, in terms of our religious diversity and the way that we are becoming a more diverse population as a people here in America, and that being reflected in the number of different faiths practiced here? How do you view that? Is that an opportunity or is it a threat to you? Do you think that this is not a good thing? What's your view on this, and what are your feelings toward it? Do you think that we have lived out the vision that the Founding Fathers had when they wrote the First Amendment to our Constitution? And if not, what do you think it is that we need to be doing better? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Eboo Patel is the founder and president of Interfaith Youth Corps. He has written Out of Many Faiths, Religious Diversity and the American Promise. He stays with us on The Morning Show. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Eboo Patel is the founder and president of Interfaith Youth Corps. He's also the author of Out of Many Faiths, Religious Diversity and the American Promise. We're discussing religious diversity in America and wondering where you think we should go with this. Are you concerned that different religions are going to change our culture in fundamental ways? Founding Fathers had the foresight to enshrine religious freedom into our Constitution right up front of the First Amendment. Do you think we're living that out these days? 800-642-1234. Eboo Patel, you mentioned the potluck theme. I mean, we've often heard that America is a melting pot, and some people say that's good, some it's bad. But you're talking about, in terms of religious diversity, you're talking about a potluck. Expand on that a little bit.
Sure. So if you double-click on the metaphor of melting pot, it means that people melt away their different identities, and they melt into some kind of generic stew. And the idea of a potluck is that people bring to the table distinctive parts of their identity. A potluck is really boring if everybody brings Wonder Bread, right? And it's really boring if everybody brings hummus. It is interesting and nutritious if people bring a contribution that's distinctive and that kind of works together. And of course, there are guidelines and some rules. You know, you shouldn't bring something that's poison, and you should be careful about people's allergies. But a potluck is going to take the shape of the people who contribute. And so should a diverse democracy. It should take the shape of the population within that democracy. And so, you know, the food that's offered in diverse cities right now reflects the diversity of that city. And I think that that's a really positive thing. And so as America gets more religiously diverse, and if part of the American promise is to give dignity to a range of religious identities, and the American genius is that those identities build up the nation, we ought to welcome and rejoice the civic contributions of the emerging religious diversity in America. Buddhist hospitals, Muslim social service organizations, Hindu colleges, just like Catholics and Jews and Presbyterians and Methodists have built civic institutions based on their own identities and served others.
Let's take a call from John in Richland Center next. John, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Yes, I believe we are getting close to maintaining our constitutional In God We Trust. You asked that question earlier. I believe we are there, and we have the best country in the whole world, and it is to do with diversity. Like, we accept all the religions, Catholics, Jews, Muslims, Hindus. I wanted to ask your guest, how does he maintain his high standards in the 21st century when most people are worshiping the almighty dollar?
John, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. Ibu?
Well, I think America's is a great nation to maintain fidelity to a religious identity. And one of the reasons for that is because you're surrounded by people from other religious identities. And part of what I think that mixing does is to help you reflect upon your own tradition. And that happens individually, but it also happens in our civic life. So my family's in this country because a university started by French Catholic priests in the 1840s admitted a wayward Muslim immigrant from India into their MBA program in the 1970s. That man would be my father, and that university was Notre Dame, and it was started by the priests of the Order of the Holy Cross. And I reflect on that all the time, that in a college started by a Catholic group gave a new life to a Muslim family. And I think to myself, how are Muslims building institutions that might do the same for Buddhist immigrants or for Jews who have been in this country for generations? I think that that is a huge part of the richness of American civic life and one of the ways that we live out our individual religious lives. There's a great insight and line in the Quran that says God made us different nations and tribes that we may come to know one another, and we ought to compete in righteousness and goodness. And so when I see people from other religions doing things that I find righteous and good, it inspires me more to express those dimensions of my own religion.
Let's go to Christine in Eau Claire next. Christine, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to mention that I come from a Catholic tradition, but I now identify as agnostic, and I'm also a feminist. And what frustrates me about religion is that it has historically and continues to be a vehicle for oppressing women. So I'm wondering how your guest looks at religion in that way. We can't truly have a democracy if there are individuals or groups who are being oppressed through a religion or otherwise.
Christine, thanks for sharing that. Ibu Patel?
You know, I certainly understand how some women who are Catholic or formerly Catholic would view matters that way, and there's clearly evidence that would allow Muslim women or women from a range of religious traditions to view a religious tradition that way. There's, you know, women aren't allowed to be priests in Catholicism. Women in most Muslim communities are not allowed or encouraged to lead at least mixed gender prayers. And so I certainly understand what the caller is saying. And I find it interesting that there are so many, like, national and world heroes who were Catholic women. So one of my great heroes is Dorothy Day, who founded the Catholic Worker Movement. Mother Teresa comes to mind. And so part of what I try to do is to wonder how people like Dorothy Day viewed her relationship with the church. Dorothy Day couldn't become a priest or a bishop or obviously the Pope, but she could start the Catholic Worker Movement, and she did. And that was a major role of leadership and something that shaped the 20th century and beyond. It's something that I was involved in when I was in college and for some years after. And so I'm always interested in how people work within a tradition to do inspiring leadership types of things.
Jacob in Madison, you'll be next. Jacob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Really interesting conversation. My question for your guest is, how do you engage in interfaith dialogue when really what you're working with are mutually exclusive truths? When you boil down some of the pleasantries of the different religions, and then what you're engaging in is a conversation with individuals who are ultimately working with an incongruent worldview of yours. I mean, if you believe Jesus is the Son of God and they don't, and that holds substantial ramifications for your life, and they don't see it that way. I mean, it's nice to get along, but ultimately, what you have is a group of people that are working with mutually exclusive truths and incongruent worldviews.
Jacob, I want to make sure our guest has time to answer. So does doctrine get in the way of diversity?
One of the fascinating things about religion is that it works on many levels. And there's no doubt that there's dimensions of doctrine which are mutually exclusive. And as one of the previous callers said, there are civic and social values that are deeply shared across religious traditions. And so if we take Martin Luther King Jr. as an exemplar of an interfaith leader, he believes deeply in Jesus as the Son of the living God, as he said, and his probably greatest influence on his life after Jesus is a Hindu for whom the central sacred text is the Bhagavad Gita. Amongst his closest companions in the civil rights movement is a Jewish rabbi, Abraham Joshua Heschel, and the only person King nominates for the Nobel Peace Prize is a Buddhist monk, Thich Nhat Hanh. And those are just a few of King's interfaith relationships. And so I think that King exemplifies how religion and a religious leader and an interfaith leader can both believe in an exclusive doctrine, which King did, and also work cooperatively with people from a range of backgrounds on those shared civic values that build up a nation. And that's what I hope we are accomplishing at my organization, Interfaith Youth Corps, and that's what I write about in my book, Out of Many Faiths, Religious Diversity and the American Promise.
Eboo Patel, thank you so much for sharing this hour with us this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being with you and your folks in Wisconsin.
Eboo Patel is the founder and president of Interfaith Youth Corps and author of Out of Many Faiths, Religious Diversity and the American Promise. This program is produced by Sarah Hopeful, Chris Molina, Colleen Leahy, Laura Pavin, Jana Roschleiss, Brianne Chasseau. Keely Biltina is executive producer. What a great team. I'm proud to have had the chance to work with them. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.